Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Again, no set schedule, just whenever I get around to finish reading it and get around to actually reviewing the book, I put it up here on the podcast feed. So this week, a little bit of delay since I actually finished reading this book because I finished it, I think, back on Monday, and then on Tuesday I flew home from that gig that I was doing down in Africa, so I'm actually back in Berlin for the first time in over 6 weeks now, so yeah, it's quite good to be back home, although it is so cold here in Berlin. I've been down in, of course, down in Portugal and then off different places for 6 weeks, and I don't have any gloves with me because I flew directly back to Berlin. And I went out to buy gloves, and the whole city seems to be sold out of gloves. I went into two main shopping centres, all of the clothes shops in these two main shopping centres, and couldn't find any gloves at all, which I think is pretty much a good indication of actually just how cold it gets here, which is why I moved away for that time. News and feedback about the podcast, some really good stuff, especially about the Canticle for Leibowitz review that I did two episodes ago. If you only listen to that one, there is a new episode up already. I uploaded two at the same time, and it's got loads of downloads, almost 1,000 downloads straight away within about 3 or 4 days, which is really interesting. And a few bits of feedback. I can't get Google Mail to open at the moment on my computer, but some of the points that I remember, one person said I was a bit down on Christianity, and it's true, really. Well, not so much about Christianity, more the Catholic Church. I think they're sort of like an evil kind of organization and corrupt to the very core, so I have a hard time appreciating fiction about them just because it gets in the way of my enjoyment. And other people seem to say, there was like two emails that said, hey, you know, it is meant to be some kind of dark comedy, and I can see that. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I did laugh at it very much in the first two parts, but not the third part of the book, and I found it quite amusing. But the thing is that if you're doing some kind of satire or irony, what you're actually putting forward in the book has to be more stupid or more silly or more unbelievable than the actual topic that you're taking the mick out of. That's the thing about satire, that people say, oh, and look at this and look at that and look at this, and then like 6 months later those same stories are actually carried out by government and politicians, and you think, oh wow, satire is real. And because this book is set so far ago, no, not, it was written so long ago, the style of satire that they're doing and the way that they're talking about religion has been done so many times since that time that Canticle for Leibowitz was written back in the 1950s, 1958 or 1959, whenever it was written, that since then, the, you know, satire has moved on so far that it's sort of like you can't really tell if they're actually taking the mick when new stories comes out about the Catholic Church and the things that they get up to, that which just, you know, make the stuff in the book almost inconsequential, which is a very strange thing, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Definitely read it. I mean, there's lots of good value in Canticle for Leibowitz, but it's very much sort of like a historical document rather than, for me, just an enjoyable read. Yeah, but anyway, there you go. Kevin writes, you were mentioned, or the podcast was mentioned in the SFX magazine in the March 2009 edition, page 30, he said, you know, because he sent me, and I was saying, oh, really, I didn't know that. And so he sent me a little transcription of what was written. This is called, under a section called Kneel Before Pod, in the free podcast section of the magazine. And it says sfbrp.com, and it gives me 4 out of 5 stars, which is pretty nice. And the description that they put there, because I just thought I'd share this, is the setup is as no frills as the title. Berlin-based SF fan Luke Burridge reads a sci-fi book and then talks about it. But while some literary podcasts can be dreary, Burridge is an enthusiastic motormouth with an infectious love of the genre. His tastes are varied, and even if you don't agree with all of his opinions, they're still fun to listen to. And Kevin puts underneath, he says, short and sweet, though I'm not sure... no, he says, though I am sure you're in two minds about being called a motormouth. And yeah, so thanks a lot for Kevin for sending me that. And I don't read the SFX magazine. I think it's a British science fiction magazine, or maybe just a general one, but there you go. So it's quite nice to have a little review, 4 out of 5 stars review there. And yeah, I actually quite like the review because it does touch on all the things that I really want to hit in my reviews. No frills. That's why I called it the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. So because I wanted it all just to be right there as well. Enthusiastic? Yeah, quite enthusiastic. Motormouth? Yeah, I'm not in two minds about that. I admit I'm a motor mouth. I do talk a lot, as I can see. I've been talking 5 minutes and haven't even got to the main topic of the podcast yet and stuff like that. And also, one of the big things about it is enthusiasm. I love the drummer. But also, whenever I have any kind of criticisms or any good criticisms or bad criticisms or any notes or anything that I want to share, hopefully I can make it fun to listen to. And also, like, back up everything that I say with evidence from the book. So if I say, oh, I don't like it, it's just like, oh, I don't like it. Or if I say, oh, it's really good, it's not like, oh, it's really good. There's lots of stuff to back it up with. Finally, last bit of news. Well, it's not news. It's sort of like just a query that someone said. Someone asked, can I use a clip of your podcast in some schoolwork that I'm doing, a project that he's doing about... well, he didn't say something about in his English class. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. So a word on licensing. The answer is yes, of course, you can use my podcast for anything that you want because it's actually released under Creative Commons, an Attribution 3.0 license. And that means, well, if you just go to creativecommons.org or whatever it is and type in 3.0, you'll be able to find out all that everything you need to know. But it pretty much means you can do whatever you want with it, anything at all, as long as you give me credit, as long as you put a link back to sfbrp.com or the website or in some way reference me in whatever you're using it for. And apart from that, you can do whatever you want with it. You don't have to ask me about it. You can use it. And even if you want to make money from it, for anything commercial, you can do that too. Although, if you find out a way of making money from this, tell me about it. And maybe I'll be able to make some money out of it in the future somehow. Anyway, so yeah, there you go. Anyone can do anything with my podcast, the sfbrp.com podcast, as much as they want. So on to today's book review, getting over those bits of news there. I'll be cutting down in news at the beginning of podcasts if people don't like it, but I think it's a good little introduction. Yes, today's book review is Century Rain by Alistair Reynolds, and I normally really enjoy Alistair Reynolds' works, and I've reviewed I think two other books by him so far. There was the I shouldn't try and remember the names off the top of my head. Let me just quickly look here on the list. Here we go. There was The Prefect, which is very good. I gave that 4 stars. I think that was one of his latest books. And there was, what was the other one? Diamond Dogs, Turquoise Days, which was actually 2 novellas sort of put together one after the other, and really good stuff. I really enjoyed them, both of them. Thing is, this book, not quite so good. I'll get onto the reasons in a bit. It was published back in 2005, so it's pretty recent, and it's not part of his sort of Revelation Space universe, which these other books were, even though I just looked it up on Amazon.com and it does say Revelation Space next to it, because I was getting the link to put that in the notes there, and it isn't a Revelation Space, so it's a standalone novel, you know, in its own right. So, let's get straight onto the world of the book. First of all, there's Paris. And, well, in fact, there's a whole world which is set in some kind of alternative universe, or what you think at the beginning of the book is some kind of alternative universe, where the German advance at the start of the Second World War failed. And so it's 20 years sort of like after that. So what is it, like late 1950s, I would guess. And, early that 1960s. But it's like the Second World War has never happened. And most of the book is set there in Paris. And the French government is becoming more nationalistic and fascist. And, yeah, so that's sort of the kind of thing that's set up there. There's police brutality and there's an oppressive government coming into effect. And we meet Floyd, and he is a musician in a jazz band, but he's not just a musician in a jazz band. With his jazz partner, called Andre, they also happen to be private investigators. Which is an interesting combination, jazz musician and private detective. So, of course, you're setting up straight away, 1950s detective kind of novel, very noir kind of stylings going on there. And actually, very much like in the previous book, in Altered Carbon, that I just reviewed last time around, the same kind of setup happens. Somebody is found dead. It's actually a young woman this time. And the police think it's a suicide or some kind of accident, and they just write it off as suicide. But the landlord of this young American woman in Paris thinks it's not, and of course he brings in Floyd and his partner to start investigating. And of course other things happen there as well, Floyd's ex-girlfriend, who used to be in the band with him, she returns back from the south of France and to look after her dying auntie and says, hey, I want you to move to America with me, to Floyd. So Floyd has got this sort of quandary. Is he going to move off back to America or over to America with his girlfriend Greta, his German girlfriend Greta, or is he going to stick around and try and solve this case? So that's his sort of main quandary there at the beginning. And what is this case? And who was this the person who moved here, this Susan White, who this American girl in Paris. Meanwhile, alternating the chapters with Floyd's chapters in 1950s alternative Paris is an archaeologist called Auger, and Auger lives a few hundred years in the future, not in the past at all, but it's not the same future as the future that was in this alternative past. It's actually our future, not the alternative's world future. So it's a little bit confusing. You think, oh, what's going on here? And she's an archaeologist who goes down to Earth and tries to dig up things and tries to get a good picture of what Earth was like in the 21st century, because there's been this nanotechnology incident and the Earth is all life on Earth is completely wiped out, and it's only the people who were in orbit around Earth at the time when this nanotechnology accident happened that survives. And there's nothing down on Earth anymore except rubble and ice and things like that. And so the people in orbit, they split into two groups. One group is called the Threshers, who sort of hold their level of technology on the threshold of it being dangerous. So they say, okay, we're not going to have any more nanotechnology or artificial intelligence or big genetic modifications, because that way darkness lies, that way trouble lies. And they go, no, we're not going to do it. And then there's another group who are very much more progressive technologically, called the Slashers. And they use their high level of nanotechnology and genetic manipulation, all these other kind of things, to try and colonize the rest of the solar system, and also this part of the galaxy as well, because they find these wormholes that are left over from different from like an alien species beforehand. Is that's what everyone thinks, or maybe they're part of the fabric of space-time. But anyway, you can travel down these wormholes and go to different places. Not really explored that much in the book, or the beginning of the book, though. So there we have. So two antagonistic groups in the future, and they've fought many wars. We're not quite sure what they're fighting over all the time, but it is explained somewhat in the book. And I've already introduced Floyd's plot. So yeah, Auger is sent on a mission to Mars, and when she gets there, she finds a wormhole which isn't controlled by the Slashers. Instead, it's controlled by the Threshers, the less progressive group who sort of have, who live around Earth, not the more progressive group who live around the rest of the solar system. So she goes through the wormhole, and of course it takes her to Floyd's world, and she is also involved there in the mystery. And it turns out that it doesn't take you to an alternative universe. It doesn't take you in time travel at all. It takes you to like a backup copy of Earth, and that's held in this big, huge, big, dumb object kind of sphere, in a different part of the nearby galaxy, a few hundred light years away. So it's not a parallel world, not time travel, but it's like a photograph captured by some kind of unknown, massively advanced alien technology, and then it sort of started running 20 years earlier by some kind of outside agent. And we don't have any clue why this is taking place or how they managed to do this or anything like that, but we just, you know, that's the setup. And it's quite an interesting setup in many ways, you know, this whole kind of thing, like, oh, it looks like time travel, it looks like alternative universe, but it isn't. It's something more bizarre. And again, I'm not really giving anything away here. It's pretty much explained in the first, you know, first 100 pages of the book. And the book's like 550, 600 pages long. So this is all set up quite early. So the book begins, and immediately we're plunged into the plot, which is both good and bad. Here's the key thing to it. It's good because the characters are moving through their worlds, like Auger is moving through her worlds, and it explains this, and it mentions this event, and it mentions that event, and it's sort of like, yeah, there's some kind of rich history there, no problem at all. Same thing happened in Floyd's world as well. He meets this person and goes there, and things are just like explained just by him coming into contact with them. Really, really good. A bit vague, but that's what I like. You know, it sort of gives you a sense of history rather than saying this is the history, then that's the history, and this is the history. But then later, instead of it just going to the sort of like this superficial but quite interesting way, we just you know, we need to start caring about actually what's happening in these worlds. So then everything is explained to us again in a lot of detail. But by that time, you've picked up everything that you need to know, all the important points and the interesting points. You've got them already, but then you get the really long explorations, and we're shown two different worlds which aren't the worlds that we know at the moment. For example, Auger's world is pretty clear, and so is Floyd's. But Auger then goes into Floyd's world, and Floyd's world is explained to Auger by lots of secondary characters, even though we already understand what's going on, because it's like right there in the plotting and right there in the description so far. And then later, Auger explains Floyd's world to him, and then she explains her own world to Floyd, and it's also explained to Auger by other people, and the narrator, like the third-person narrator, explains it to us as well. So each time we're getting long-winded and sort of tedious details and information just dumped right down onto us. And it also normally happens right in the middle of some kind of crucial chase scene, journey kind of thing going on, that they'll be doing something, they've got to get somewhere, but on the way they'll have a conversation, they'll explain some plot points and different things. And most of it isn't needed, or the information is needed, but it's already given to us. For example, they mention this thing called A Musica, which is sort of like this artificial virus that was introduced to people, into one group of people, to make it so they can't listen to music, it's just noise to them. And it was just mentioned sort of like, oh, that was the end of music, or that was the day the music died or something. And it's just like this historical event, and everything you need to know is done there, because it's all explained with, you know, everything else is happening, nanotechnology, being infested with nanotechnology and that kind of stuff, and genetic manipulation and all that kind of stuff. So you just think, yeah, okay, that's a really nice idea. Until then, like way later, 300 pages later in the book, when this is an established part of the book already, then it's all explained to us in detail why it was done and how it was done. And there's no reason for it was done. To be done, you know, you didn't need to. It could have been just like this nice mysterious thing that happened in the past, but no, it had to be explained over and over and over again. There are quite a few things that I liked about the book. Not a lot, though. I just really want to get this out of the way at the beginning. There's sort of like some earlier kind of thriller style things that I found mildly interesting and different ideas that were going on. And I really like the idea that there's like this portal that you go through into the alternative world, which stops you taking any kind of advanced technology into it. So you can only go across there with paper in your pocket. And I really liked a lot of these ideas, and the world that it was set up was very interesting. And I thought it could have been done so much with it, but then it's all just discarded. Wow, I didn't actually have a lot of stuff to say about the book, but it's sort of like a very short and vague list of things that I liked. It's sort of generally there's some setup, generally there's some world building that I like, but actually the book itself isn't that good at all. Bad things that starting off straight away with the plot. It begins as a thriller, sort of noir mystery kind of angle with Floyd and his partner going off. And you've also got this sort of voyage of discovery and subterfuge kind of action on Auger's side of the equation there as well. But then about, you know, a third of the way through, Floyd and Auger, they meet up, and then their story just runs side by side. So they're both with each other all the time. But the viewpoint keeps flicking from one to the other, but then it doesn't really move from one to the other. So it's a bit mixed up there in a way, and also by about half the way through we know everything that's going on, everything that's going down, we know who all the players are, you know, there's not really any more mystery. I mean, there is a tiny bit more mystery. It's sort of like one thing, it's sort of like, oh, they keep thinking, oh, what is this one thing, and why, what is this one little document, and why do we need this kind of thing going there. But actually later on that's wrapped up in sort of like half a page. So there's no mystery, and like halfway through the book it's just like, oh, there was lots of interesting stuff about politics in France and fascist governments and mystery and personal responsibility and all these different kind of things going on at the beginning of the book. And then it all just turns into like this really long drawn out chase sequence with spaceships and other stuff and like gun battles in space and in Paris and things. And then there's like, and it's just filled in by, you know, while they're on a chase and they're going from one place to another, you know, four main characters pretty much explain stuff to each other that the audience already knows, and it's just dragged out, and there's no tension either, because Auger and Floyd, like other people getting shot, but no matter what happens they always manage to shoot the bad guy, you know, and at the end they can get damaged, but it's always a flesh wound. It's sort of like this, you know, the thing in the films called the stormtrooper effect, you know, Luke Skywalker just kills all the stormtrooper, and there's loads of, you know, bolts, you know, these what do you call them, laser beams coming back in the way, and they always miss, you know. So it's that same kind of thing. It's like you never expect Auger or Floyd to be in any danger at all, because, you know, it just seems to be, you know, set out at the beginning that they get themselves out of different situations so easily. You think, oh, well, these guys aren't, you know, they're no problem at all. And what another note is here? Oh yeah, and also a lot of the journeys, they sort of get on and they just ride along. Like they take a train journey and they take another kind of, let me just, you know, I don't want to give it away, but there's another kind of form of train journey going on as well, and there's other stuff. But they never, you know, they sort of drive around a bit, but the journeys that they go on, they can just sit around and explain stuff to each other. And Floyd, his experience is very much in the 1950s world, but then when suddenly he needs to drive and Auger can't drive, and it's like, oh yeah, but Floyd can drive, we'll just use him. I'm thinking, wait a second, he's just escaped from the 1950s, and then he suddenly has to be in charge of technology 200 years in our future, and sort of like really advanced technology, and it's one of those weird things that I'm just like, wow, like the plot calls for it, so he's got to do it, and there didn't seem to be any internal consistency here. Strangely enough, mystery. Again, if there's a mystery, I like mystery. I always like books with mystery. No problem at all there. Thing is, it has to be something I actually care about. And I didn't, you know, there was nothing that was happening here that I was really caring about. There was this big mystery there. Oh, what's happening there? It's like, yeah, but you're taking me off in so many different directions. I can't concentrate on the one thing that should be mysterious now. And also, it's just really badly written mystery. Like I say, you find something out and then 100 pages later, and you just presume it's happening. And then 100 pages, 200 pages later, yeah, it's being explained to you in detail. For example, like right at the beginning of the book, like on in chapter 3 or 2, we learn out that Slashers, the future faction called the Slashers, they look very young. They look like adolescents. They look like children. And then right at the very beginning, the first investigation that Floyd does into the crime scene, there's a child there, and he goes, "What's this child?" You know, and it's like, wait a second, you've just given it all away. And I don't really want to give, I'm not really giving it away here, because it's so blatantly obvious that the Slashers are somehow involved in this way when they say, oh, they look very much like children. That used to be the fad, that Slashers look like children. And then they turn up somewhere, it's like, mysterious, suspicious looking children hanging around in Paris. You're like, oh, I wonder who they are. You know, foreshadowing, like, with the subtlety of some kind of brick, you know, to the face. And also, Floyd is a musician, and he's a private investigator. It's like, well, I know why he's a private investigator, because he has to be the main investigator character here at the core of the story at the beginning in Paris. But then, of course, he's a music lover as well. And the other people on Earth, they're not music lovers, are they? No, they can't be, because they have a musicker. And it's sort of like, okay, I understand what this big mystery is going to be, or what one of these key mysteries is going to be by the end of the book. And I'd write it out like 200 pages in advance, because it's like, again, when it's set up, when the main identity of someone is, I'm a musician and a private investigator, and you know why I'm a private investigator, but all the way through to the end of the book, you'll maybe find out why I also have to be a musician, and it's like that kind of thing. I mean, I've given away two things there, maybe slightly, if you don't work them out yourself, but this kind of thing happens time and time and time again all the way through the book. It's like, yeah, I understand what's going on. 50, 100 pages later, the two people, the two main characters, then explaining it to each other, and then they explain it to someone else, and then they explain it to someone else off the top of that as well. So yeah, the reader always seems to know what's happening more than the characters. That's the note that I put down here. But there are red herrings, and I don't really want to say which parts are the red herrings, but I was like, you know, at one point I'm like, why did the character spend so long looking at that lead or that thing that they found in the apartment, like 2 days spent on something in the apartment? And then at the end, it's not like, oh, it turned out to be a red herring. That didn't have anything to do with it. You know, the characters don't say that. We're not told it was a loose end. It's just dropped from the book. And there's whole sections that are just dropped from the book in favour of the big spaceship chase at the end. Like in, I had the same kind of criticism over Piedelio Street Station. Like, had all this different setup, politics, you know, society, and all these different kind of things being explored in the beginning of the book, and then halfway through, no, it's going to be a bug hunt. And the same thing that happens here, you know, nothing that happens at the beginning of the book, well, I wouldn't say nothing, but there's whole big parts about the book at the beginning in Floyd's world, and then, of course, they leave Floyd's world, you know, the alternative Paris, and they go across into Auger's world, into sort of like the real world, as you could call it. But everything that they've done so far, except for what this one little mystery, they leave behind there, and it has zero impact on the rest of the story. The whole thing with politics is sort of like dropped halfway through, because nothing you can do in this kind of alternative universe plays out, does it have any effects on the rest of it at all. So that means all these ideas about this thing, and it's sort of like, okay, yeah, you've got something to save, you want to save the your friends back in this alternative universe, and you have to go out into the other universe, but it's sort of like, it doesn't There's no crossover at all. And the same thing at the end as well. Everything that they're doing outside of the alternative universe doesn't actually have that much to do with what's going on the inside either. So that's a bit strange. Two more things about the plot that I wrote down here. Very plot heavy here, I guess, in my criticism. Motivation of the slashers. I'm like, what was it? You know, we meet a slasher or two, but only the moderates. And this entire war going on between the slashers and the threshers. But it's never properly explained. You know, at one point they say, oh, they don't want to kill us in this war. They just want to convert us to their way. So I'm like, so why are you killing each other? If it's just a difference of opinion, there's nothing that they're doing here. And it's sort of like, so why do they want to destroy, or why do they want to get involved in this alternative universe? It's like, is it for revenge that they're going about it? And it's like, that's what they say in one part of the book. And I'm like, but why are you taking revenge, an alternative world, an alternative timeline? By definition, because it is an alternative timeline, they can't be responsible for the actions of this other population. And it's sort of like this really critical thing. It's like, why? What is the big drama? What is the big, battle going on here that the main characters have to resolve? Because there's just no motivation on the other side. It's like, you might as well just say, you know what you're doing over there is pointless. And there's another point that says, oh, and then it's for real estate. And I'm like, there's no real estate. They've got wormholes to the rest of the galaxy. There's plenty of space to go around. You don't need to do anything for real estate. So that was very disappointing there, the motivation of the bad guys, the bad faction, because I must call them the bad faction because they are just baddies. You know, it's never really explained why they're baddies in a way, because the goodies do, or the historically the good side has been just as bad as the bad side. Bit weird going, strange thing going on there. And lastly, there's of course the love angle, the love story between Floyd and Auger. Suddenly they're like, oh, and she looked at him and she was in love. And then it's like, he looked at her and he was in love. And I was like, what the hell? When did that happen? They sort of go off on a trip I'm not going to say what happens, but they go off on this trip. And then by the end of it, they're like in love. And I'm like, excuse me. Like, I know you're spending huge parts of the book just having characters explaining things to each other. How about you explain to me what these two people see in each other and why they think each other fascinating and why they fall in love. I mean, you know, Floyd has got this girlfriend. It's like, wow, you would have thought that would be the way to go. Of course, you know that's not going to happen by something else I'll say in a bit. That pretty much leads me to the characters, which I don't really have a lot to say about the characters. They're sort of a little bit interesting, not too one-dimensional. Floyd really annoys me because he's got this... I'll talk about that in the writing when I get to the writing style. I made a note of it there. But like by the end of the book, the main characters aren't actually doing anything that matters, like I say, except for this one little piece of knowledge or this mystery that Floyd or Auger have the power to be able to solve somewhere within them. But at that point, they could have been replaced by any other two characters. And it sort of does happen in a way, because some slasher pilot that we meet, you know, he just happens to turn up at one point. He suddenly becomes like the main driver of the plot. He's making all the decisions. He's carrying out all of the actions or any technical kind of stuff that needs doing. He's doing, and Floyd and Auger are just sort of coming along for the ride. They're just, you know, they're just hanging about. And I really dislike it when that happens in the book, when it gets to a point where the main characters are no longer driving the plot. They're not actually doing anything. They're just being carried along. And it's a big weakness at the end of this book. Minor characters are sort of hanging around. But again, very few minor characters get up to anything at all. Next up, technology and science. I'll talk about this for a second. I've mentioned this before, rules of the universe. Science fiction, what I class as science fiction, or important is that I enjoy about science fiction, is that the rules of the universe have to be the same at the beginning of the book as they are at the end of the book. Or more importantly, they've got to be the same at the end of the book than they are at the beginning. You can't sort of change all the rules halfway through and then say, oh, and that's going to resolve the story. I mean, it's sort of just really, really clumsy, bad writing. Actually, I had this conversation last night in the bookshop, in the English bookshop that is just around the corner here in Berlin, and Alan, the owner of the bookshop, he had this very telling point. We were talking a bit about fantasy, and we sort of mentioned this rules of the universe thing, you know, because generally in fantasy the rules of the universe are a little bit more, I mean, they can be very set, you know, but that, you know, set rules are very much something to do with science fiction, whereas a little bit more fluid rules is more to do with fantasy, or that's the way that I perceive it sometimes, just with the way I read fantasy. And he said, yeah, it does happen a bit, but he says one of the rules of the universe in this book is that when our hero finds the right magic stone, all the rules of the universe change from what we already know, and that sort of launches the second trilogy. And I thought that was actually quite an interesting little insight. Not all the time, but he says that sort of tends to happen a little bit in fantasy books, especially when they need to sort of change the rules a bit to up the stakes for the next book or for the next trilogy or for the part 8 in the book. And the thing is, I can't really say that the rules of the book at the end of this, at the end here, are different than they are at the beginning in Alistair Reynolds' Century Reign. The thing is, we never really know the rules of the book. For example, we never really told what the Threshers are capable of. We sort of said, you know, we get to know Aragorn a little bit of what she's doing, but we never get to sort of see what kind of technology that they live in. We just know that there's habitats around, like, orbiting around Earth. But we're never told what kind of living conditions they have or how big the habitats are. We're not told what the scale of it is. And the same with the Slashers as well at the same time. We're never really told what they have. And we're told, oh, this is a spaceship and it's the very last antimatter spaceship and it can get across there in this kind of speed. But then there's other kind of spaceship which travels at another speed. But then it's sort of like, how fast can the spaceships go? It's never really set out. So when we get to the end of the book, it's like, oh, we've got to get to Earth and we've got to get there quickly. I'm like, how long is that going to take? And it takes the time that it needs to be taken for two people to explain stuff enough to each other and to explore a little bit more of the world. But then it's sort of like, okay, so it takes hours to get from Mars to Earth. But then later on in the book, in the same spaceship, it seems to take hours to get from Earth orbit, from Moon orbit, the line of the orbit of the Moon, to Earth as well. And it seems to just, everything just seems to take as long as it needs to take for the plot to happen. And, like, you know, it's sort of like the wormhole is really dangerous. How dangerous is it? Well, it's as dangerous as it needs to be to create enough tension at the time that it needs to happen to do this. And it's sort of like, so what kind of technology do we need to use at the other end of the wormhole? Well, we need this amount of technology until we don't have enough people to run that kind of technology, but then we'll just bring through, you know, this kind of technology and patch it to that technology. And, yeah, very, very disappointing. There's a great quote that really wraps up in the book here, page 365 in the hardcover book that I was reading there, that I took from the ship's library that I was on, and this is actually a line right from the book. We call it the quantum. This is Auger talking to another character. She says, "We call it a quantum snapshot, but that doesn't mean we have a clue. Yeah, I'm just getting tripped up by the words here because I think it needed a bit editing. There seem to be lots of little mistakes with the editing of the book. So I'll start this again. Excuse me. We call it a quantum snapshot, but it doesn't mean we have one clue about what was involved in producing it. It's just a name we give it to hide our ignorance." And that was a big thing. It's just a name we give to hide our ignorance. And it's like, yes, that is the book. Welcome to the book. The author has lots of names to give things which are somehow in the book, you know, that somehow have some impact in the book, but we're not told how it works or what rules are in place with these things. We're just told, oh, there's this exotic energy field and some trans-dimensional flippity dop thing, then we clip this and there and we can just run, and we're like, yay, and the wormhole works. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but, you know, how long can a wormhole be? How long does it take to get from one to the other? I mean, it's sort of mentioned in the book, but there's nothing there that makes it me feel like it's worth exploring. It's sufficiently advanced enough to be magic, but not sufficiently explained enough to be believable or for me to care about it anyway. It's like Star Trek, you know, and this seemed to be, you know, there was a few things where I just think, oh, this is just a bit like a Stargate episode, because it's at one point they're just going, oh, and we'll bounce the spigular ray off the deflector field shield and we'll create a vortex in the eighth dimension, pick up some kind of energy from here and we'll spit it out that way and shoot down the other guy. And you're like, that's very well done, Captain, you know, you came up. You know, it's sort of like the whole thing at the end of Star Trek episode. They just have to come up with the right series of words. And it's like, oh, we've never used those series of words in the order before. That's probably going to work. And it does. And then in the next episode, they go off into some parallel dimension, which all turns out that it's happening in the holodeck. And it's that kind of thing. And you just think, wow, really, really must do better. You can't just go into, what do they say? It's just a name we give it, jargon to hide our ignorance. Okay, so I don't want to say what those things that are in the book, because, you know, mainly because I don't want to give it away, but also there's no point, because if the rules are that flexible, I just can't you know, if it's so flexible, I can't enjoy it because it removes any tension, because I just know at the end, oh, well, what they'll do is they'll just use the nanotechnology to make a different kind of weapon, and that weapon will be good enough to kill the guys, won't it? Yeah, it will be. And then at the end of the book, you're like, oh, yeah, it was. I'm not saying that's happened. And again, it's sort of like the same kind of thing with the Amusica virus. We're sort of told some stuff, and it was just sort of like an idea that was out there. Really great. But then we're told all this different kind of stuff. Oh, it works like this, and we did it that way, and we did it that way, and we did it that way. It's like, actually, by trying to explain this kind of stuff away, you've made it less interesting for me to read about. Yes, so moving on. A bit of a writing style kind of issue here. The sort of like the wisecracking detective Floyd sort of gets on my nerves a bit. I don't mind wisecracking when he's the guy in charge in Paris. He knows everyone. He goes all to the bars, you know, into the sort of underbelly of Paris, and he's avoiding the police and, you know, talking to different kind of people, and he's got all the wisecracks, good stuff. Thing is, then he goes from his own universe, and he's sort of going on a spaceship ride, and he's going through different dimensions, and we're through wormholes, and finding out all this different stuff, and virtual worlds, and nanotechnology, and genetic engineering, all that kind of stuff, and he's just wisecracking the entire time. There's like, he doesn't have any sense of wonder about him at all. Auger does, because she goes through and she goes, oh wow, look, a zoo. And Floyd looks at her and she's like, wow, it's as though she's never seen penguins before. And you're like, that actually really sums it up, you know, in a world where there's no penguins left anymore, that kind of sense of wonder from the character is quite interesting. But Floyd, it's just not written there at all, and it's like in third person, so it doesn't have to be him wisecracking all the time, but that seems to be all we've got. Another thing about the writing style, which was I thought was a bit weird, was the Casablanca references and some other references in there as well. Floyd is always going, hey, kid, when he's talking to sort of like the female characters, and I'm like, okay, that sounds a bit sort of like, here's looking at you, kid, kind of quote going on there. And then there were some other references, and I'm thinking, wait a second, that was seemed to be in Casablanca as well. And then at one point, one character actually says to the other, this could be the start of a wonderful friendship, or something like blatantly like that. And I'm like, but you can't say that, because now you've given away the end of the book, or some question that was in the book, you know, Greta, the German girlfriend, saying, oh, I want you to come off to America with me. And then at the end of the book, you're like, will he go to America with the girl? And you're like, stop dropping in all these Casablanca references, and it might be some kind of mystery. Again, I don't really want to give it away, but, well, I just have given it away. Yeah, of course he doesn't go across there at the end, but if you're going to drop in all Casablanca references, which is weird, because Casablanca was set in the Second World War, and in this book the Second World War didn't happen, I'm like, oh, great. Another few weird cultural references that were in there, the Slashers. It said, oh, they come from a network back in the day who liked technology, and their emblem or their flag was a slash with a dot. And I'm like, a slash with a dot, network who like technology. And you're thinking, what, a bit like the website Slashdot? So yeah, the Slashers is some kind of geek internet community who like chatting about open source software and technology and that kind of stuff, and they're the Slashers of the future who are warring against them. It's like, yeah, okay, nice idea, but a little bit of subtlety there could have been, you know, sort of like their emblem was a slash and a dot. Great stuff. Another thing, a bit of a writing style, which is a bit weird, was the sort of like the dream sequence. The only way there's sort of like this horrific kind of event which is happened in the past and might be repeated, and we're like, oh no, what's going to happen? And the way that we discover how bad it's going to be is a dream sequence, which I don't mind. Again, dream sequences are good. It's a little bit clumsy. I'm thinking, yeah, that's great. Except then the entire dream sequence is explained 100 pages later in sort of very tedious and redundant detail. And you're like, sure, we know that kind of thing's possible. We already have that sense of horror that's there already. Stop just explaining stuff to us so many times that we don't care about it. And finally, there's this other thing, like I said before, there's no sense of suspense in the book, no sense of surprise of anything that's going to happen, because you've already worked it out so far in advance, except for this one thing right at the end of the book, closing chapter, the two chapters of the book or something like that, where one character says, oh, and Olga, I have to tell you something. And she's like, no, I'm busy, you can't tell me it now. It's like, no, I really need to tell you, it's really, really important. And she's like, no, don't, I don't want you to tell me it, I don't have the time to tell you it. And of course, she isn't told it. And you're thinking, wow, that is like the most artificial suspense I've ever seen built ever. It's like, I need to tell you something very important. No, don't tell me it. And it's sort of like, okay. Up until this point, we the readers have known more than the characters in the book all the time. And then suddenly we're told that a character knows something that we don't know. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just this weird kind of look at surprise and suspense. You know, this is the big thing, of course, that Hitchcock was always on about. He said, I could just have a bomb under the table and it'd go off, boom, and that's a big surprise. He says, but the surprise will last a second. He says, much better is to have two characters sitting at a table, and the audience knows there's a bomb under the table, but and it could go off at any time, but the people, you know, sitting either side of the table, they don't know it can go off. And, of course, that's suspense. And he says, the best thing to do is put a clock on the wall, counting down to 12 o'clock, and the people, know that the bomb is going to go off at 12 o'clock, but the people sitting either side of the table don't know it's going to go off at 12 o'clock, but they're sitting there having a conversation, we're watching the clock count down. That kind of thing is suspense. You can't just give us all the information. You can't just go, oh, this is the thing. And, you know, I don't know, it's just like in other books by Alistair Reynolds, there's so much more suspenseful, so much, and that's one of my sort of, weirdly enough, that was one of my criticisms of the Prefect book, is that by the end of it, everything was wrapped up so well, and yeah, sort of, there was a mystery, and there was lots of different stuff going on, but this book is just, it's just laughable, just how bad it is, how badly all the suspense and is written into it, and all the mystery and thriller kind of aspects are just explained away really early on. And the only way to keep the suspense later on is by just like, oh, will the spaceship catch this other spaceship? Will this spaceship do this kind of stuff? And there's also this other stuff, you know, going on. It's sort of like, oh, we need to have this scene at the Eiffel Tower. Again, I don't want to give it away. It's just like, if you read this book, tell me why that scene had to happen on the Eiffel Tower at all. It just happened to be a cool place to set that scene, but it didn't need to happen there at all. That kind of thing happens throughout the book too. I talk about the themes, but it's not really worth talking about. It's just a chase sequence it goes down to, and it's sort of wishy-washy. I don't really know what I'm meant to be feeling or what I'm meant to be thinking about. In fact, I'm not even sure which kind of questions I'm meant to be asking when I'm reading this book. So I'm not going to talk about the themes here. Just overall, because I've been going on long enough now, it really, you know, as I was reading this book, I thought, no, I want to read it and I want to get it finished by the time I leave the cruise ship that I was working on. So I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. And then I'll just read the Ian M. Banks book, The Matter, his latest book, Matter. And I'll just read that on the plane home. So, you know, I'll just read it now. And I kept getting to the point, I was like, oh, I just can't be bothered to read this anymore. And I had to force myself to finish the book. And to be honest, by the time I got to the end of the book, I'd wish I'd have stopped reading when I first thought, I don't feel like reading this anymore, because it's just not worth reading at all. The only reason I carried on reading is because it's by Alistair Reynolds, and Alistair Reynolds is a really good author. I mean, even his least favourite books that I've read so far from him, ahead of this, they've still been like really good, sort of like solid three and a half star books that I can. There's so much stuff that I can enjoy in there. They're really well put together. Was this? To be honest, when I was reading it, I was thinking, is this actually an Alistair Reynolds book? It's like that kind of thing that Tom Clancy does. He writes the books and he sets up this world, and it's very important and very impressive. But then they say, Tom Clancy, and they put out his book, and then people said, wait a second, this book's a bit crap. And they said, yeah, actually, it was just Tom Clancy's universe, and somebody else was writing in his Rainbow Six universe, or in his... to be honest, I've never read a Tom Clancy book, or not for 15 years or so, or whatever it is. But yeah, sort of other people were writing Tom Clancy's characters. And it seems like that's what's happened here, except that if they'd have done that, they should have made it be like one of them in his Revelation space books, rather than this new kind of thing. Because it's only like the nanotechnology, Holocaust kind of dark themes, you know, dystopia kind of themes that he put in there that makes me think it's an Alistair Reynolds book at all. Everything else about that I liked about Alistair Reynolds' writings just isn't there. It just failed, just fell completely, very, completely flat. So if it really is an Alistair Reynolds book, very disappointed with him. But it, to be honest, I would be surprised in many ways, but it's one of those things I wouldn't be surprised if this was, say, just like a throwaway novel that he didn't actually want to publish, but the publisher like, come on, have you got that novel ready yet? It's like, yeah, I had this short story idea, I'll write that up as a novel as well. And they're like, yeah, no problem, we'll take it. So it could have been a 250-page story, like an adventure kind of story, and it would have been good, but it dragged out to 600 pages, and it's very, very disappointing. So I'm going to just give this book 2 stars, but sort of like a low 2 stars. In fact, let me have a look here on the website. If you go to sfbrp.com, check on the wiki and check on the what's the star ratings of all the books so far. What's the other 2.0 star books I've got so far? Buzz Aldrin, John Barnes in Counter with Tiber. Yeah, it's about that kind of level. Very flawed in many ways, and just not enjoyable. And by the end, not very enjoyable book to read at all. So yeah, 2 stars. There we go. Next book that I'm going to read is... Matter by Ian M. Banks. And I say that I'm going to read, I actually just finished it this morning, because I went out and I was drinking last night and other stuff last night, so I was a bit tired and I couldn't be bothered to get up this morning, so I sat in and just finished off that book, which is is interesting. Of course I'm going to review it next time. And then after that, the book I'll be starting reading probably this evening is Dan Simmons' Hyperion, because this is probably after Altered Carbon, this is probably one of the most requested books that everyone say, oh no, you should read Hyperion by Dan Simmons. I have read Dan Simmons before, but not, at least I think so, but not this book. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because everyone seems to be raving about that book. So yeah, Ian M. Banks coming up, review coming up soon, probably today or tomorrow, and then that book, and then I'll move on to, I don't know, some shorter books again, some older books as well. So thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this review. Sorry about going on long again, but I did have lots of notes as I was writing this book, and maybe because I knew that I wouldn't have the book in front of me as I was reviewing the book, because I left it on the cruise ship, and I knew I wouldn't have time to review it there. I wrote down more notes than normal, so maybe I should write down a few less notes in upcoming podcast recording. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time. Email me, luke@juggler.net. Go to the wiki, leave your feedback there. See you later.